Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, show number 96. Stephen, weren't you going to read this line?
I think I was, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're welcoming Beam from the Meet the Author podcast from Carter Novels, Rob and Joan Carter. He just did a video podcast with them over there. Any of you who followed us over here, welcome. Of you who are new, welcome to Voice of Indie. We'd like to show you what we're doing over here. Rob and Joan Carter archive all of these podcasts. So if you missed it or just want to see it again, you want to catch Beam, he'll get you info then this week and make sure we have it in our newsletter next Wednesday morning so that you can just, simple as a click, go check out that really cool podcast.
Indeed.
It was a very good show.
Yeah, and while you're over there, be sure to like it and subscribe if you're not subscribed to the Meet the Author YouTube channel as well. That was just a lot of fun. It's different from this one because the audience sees you, whereas this one, they're just hearing us. But, man, it was a lot of fun. And Joan and Rob are just good people, and they make you feel welcome, and they make you feel comfortable. And it's just was a good time. So we are working on some stuff right now. I'm working on audiobooks. I'm working on the Girl Wears Those Shoes audiobooks by author Jenny Wong. And also working on the Mad Max and Sweet Sarah audiobook for author Ellie Collins. And the Jenny Wong one is coming along a little bit further than the Mad Max one. Our voiceover artist ended up coming down with COVID, so he was sidetracked for a bit, and it really messed with his voice, so it wouldn't have worked with him trying to work through it. But now he's back up and hitting on all cylinders, so we should be receiving some more of those audio files before too long. And I'm currently editing a book by Andrew McGregor. He's a new author, and this is a guy to look out for. It's an interesting, compelling story. And we're also getting ready to put together a whole slew, as the kids say. Kids don't say that, do they? Put together a whole bunch of these new book trailers for books that we've got coming out and books that have recently been released. So keep an eye on our YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, and find out. Now, if you want to, tonight is going to be a masterclass in point of view. All you writers and aspiring writers, point of view is vitally important for an author because if you're head hopping a lot, your readers are not going to stick around to the conclusion of your story. And Stephen is going to teach a masterclass on that. If you've got questions or comments on that, you can reach us on the phone. We will talk to you on the air. And we also will read your comments on Twitter. So here's how you can do all that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. Cool. Now, Beam, you don't know this yet, but you know we're just about finished with that audio book for Robert G. Willis Croft's The Orc Federation, To the Stars, The Second Orc Chronicle. We need for the voice actor Trenton Bennett to read one line as a pickup line because there was a mispronounced word in there, and it's an important word. He just came down with COVID, and has messed up his voice. So we're just going to be waiting for a little bit here until he gets better
email.
As well.
I did see that email, yeah.
So bad timing on our voice actors this past week.
We just showed you something here, though. We need him to read one line because he mispronounced the word. That's how serious we are with this stuff. It's just a simple line, and if the author wants that fixed, guess what? We're sending a note to the voice guy and say, hey, this is how you pronounce it.
And this is for our author, Robert G. Williscroft. I make fun of him every now and then, call him persnickety, but that's because I'm persnickety, you know, and that's the way we are. And if there's just anything that's not right, you know, it's like if you're learning math and somebody's got cue cards, don't have the corner on one of those cue cards bent. I'm just too distracted to pay attention to the numbers if that corner's bent. So, but any rate, that thing should be done sometime in the next week or two. Hopefully we'll get that thing out. We all want to give a quick shout out to here to Fresh Ink Group members and longtime supporters, Verwayne Greenhoe, who's just had surgery this week and is having some serious health issues that have really been hard. And Dr. Helen Burrell out in New York. She's recovering from cancer and pneumonia, and things have been tough for her.
We've got a GoFundMe page up for Dr. Helen. Check our newsletter out and get over to at Fresh Ink Group on Twitter, and you'll find information on that. She definitely needs some help, because as Stevens mentioned before, she's a shut-in, and she really needs help. But now you're talking about Verwayne. He is out in the audience tonight. I see him on Twitter. He says it's hot here today, and I'm still 100%. And I'm still not 100%, but I am here. And welcome, Verwayne. And Joe Conjo, he commented to Verwayne. He says, it's hot here, too. We're still at 90 degrees at 8 p.m. And Verwayne came back with, it's about 90 here. We had a high of 95. Ick. So there you go.
I think we should be quiet and let these guys just talk.
Yeah.
I love it when the conversations get going. We also want to mention, we've been talking about Robert G. Williscroft. His award-winning short story, Reality Hack, is one of three finalists in the 2022 Cal Awards for Short Stories. Earlier this year, the Naval Institute awarded the story third place in its international short story competition. His novel, Operation Arctic Sting, is one of three finalists in the 2022 Cal Awards for Thrillers. The Cal Awards winners will be announced on June 19th between 3 and 5:30 p.m. So best of luck to you, Robert, and
we'll keep
our listeners informed with the newsletter and what's going on with this podcast.
All right, and speaking of short stories, we are in need of short fiction entries for the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number 2. We did one here a few years ago, and some really cool short stories in there. I've got some in there, and Stephen's got some in there, and there's a bunch of other wonderful indie authors that have their work in there. And we're also putting together a mini memoir, short essays, for our first short memoir showcase. And these are being compiled by Fresh Ink Group's own Lauren A. Smith. She is hard at work putting these together and keeping them in specific files and whatnot. And she has about a third of what is needed for the fiction. So if you're a writer and you would like the coolness of having a short story or two or three or four published in an anthology, send them to Lauren at Fresh Ink Group. Would that be the one, Stephen?
Yeah.
Lauren at FreshInkGroup.com?
Yep.
Yeah, just send them there.
Or contest at FreshInkGroup.com. There's a tab right on FreshInkGroup.com website called Contest. You click
contest,
on that,
yeah.
And there's a form to fill out. And we'd much rather you fill out the form. That way we've got all your information comes with it, too.
Yep. All right. So, do that. If you're a writer, get them in there. That's, you know, early on, that's how I got a lot of my short stories out there, with anthologies. There's a whole bunch of these anthologies out there that some of them aren't in print anymore, but they were just a collection of really good writers, and I was invited to contribute to several of them, and that's how I, you know, built the foundation on, you know, the Beam Weeks brand, if you will. You there, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm waiting for the next roll-in.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the next roll-in, did you know we've got a newsletter? I bet you didn't. This is probably the first time we've ever mentioned this newsletter. Not. If you want to know who's going to be on this show, you need a link to get into the studio and listen to this show. You want to know what's going on with the guest. What have they done? Where's their books or music or whatever? it's going to be in this newsletter, as well as new books that are being released, websites that you might want to check out if you're a reader or if you're a writer or if you're a music fan. We got all kinds of cool stuff in there. Here is how you can subscribe to said newsletter.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
Yeah. So I checked in to see what print sales were looking like so far this week over the last 30-day aggregate. And the past couple of weeks, I've mentioned that we are utterly shocked, just shocked, that a book that we published, one of the first books Fresh Ink Group ever published quite a few years ago, and the author is long passed away, and right now the website that touts it is down because we got hacked and hijacked, and we're rebuilding it now, and then all of a sudden one of the books is selling like crazy, and that's Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition, by Dr. Marshall L. Shearer, MD, and his wife Margaret R. Shearer, MD. And by the way, it's he's long gone. He developed dementia and then passed away. It's her birthday today, and I believe she's 95, I think, 94
Happy
or 95, something
Margaret
like that.
Shearer.
So, yeah. So anyway, Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition. And if you add up the next four on this list and then triple that number, that's still less than we're selling of this intimate communication book.
That
I don't understand
mind-boggling.
It. I don't get it, but we'll happily take it. Now, in the second and fifth slots are the hardcover and softcover editions of How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So that's starting to move along briskly here. The website for that is almost done, should be done in the next day or two. Is that right, Beam?
Yeah. We're going to do some finishing touches tomorrow, and it should be ready to go.
Yep, and she's just finished writing the Georgia book, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. We're almost done with the cover for Georgia, and then Tennessee is going to be after that. And we're going to start rolling these things out, load this website up with guides for food truck businesses all across the country. And then the third slot this week, I've talked about this before, another one of those, we're not quite getting it, but we're happy to take it, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction. Out there still moving along at a steady clip. And then in the number four slot this week, one that's been in and out of these top five for years and is back in this week at number four, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon, who, by the way, if you happen to be anywhere near North Alabama, and I'm definitely talking to you, Marlena Smith, in Geraldine a week from Saturday, country music star Leah Seawright, who's married to Mark Herndon, and Mark Herndon is her drummer, are giving a free concert in the city park in Geraldine. And it's definitely worth checking out. If you want some more information on that, use the contact form at Fresh Ink Group, get a hold of us, and we'll draw you a map if we need to. Congratulations to our authors who are getting their print sales out there. And again, shock and awe. It's every week, people. We love it.
Yeah, and now of those books that Stephen just mentioned, we don't have a trailer for Maximizing Happiness, which is another thing that makes it even more mind-boggling that this book is selling that much without a book trailer and without much, you know, push from us on that one, although we probably should start pushing it now. But so there's no trailer for Maximizing Happiness, but the other three have book trailers on YouTube. The YouTube channel for Fresh Ink Group, just get on YouTube, Fresh Ink Group, boom, you're there. Like and subscribe. And if you miss an episode of this show, every episode is archived over there. I usually get to it within 3 to 4 days after each episode. It's up there. But you can go over to YouTube for that stuff too. And there's other places you can find us in the archive, and here's how.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
All right. So now let's get to our guest tonight. Our guest is a jerk. He's a punk. No, I'm just kidding. Tonight's guest is Mr. Gees. Stephen Gees has... He earned his undergrad and grad degrees at the University of Michigan. I feel sorry for him, but, you know, whatever. A composer, TV producer, publisher, graphic artist, and writer, he focuses now on novels, essay collections, short fiction, authors how-to under the G's Writer brand, and scripts. G's is the founding member of Fresh Ink Group, which is found at freshinkgroup.com, originally an organization for providing literary management to him and his writer friends. The group, FIG, has grown and morphed into author services and now a full publishing company producing and distributing worldwide hardcover, softcover, multi-platform ebook editions, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks, along with supporting media such as book trailers. He now divides his time between his own writing and the work and working with other authors in all aspects of the industry, from editing to graphic designs to marketing. Find how-tos from G's Writer and other great industry experts at G'sWriter.com. That's G'sWriter.com. Watch for his essays, stories, books, and blog posts at StephenG's.com. Find him and his author friends at FreshInkGroup.com. Send him a note from his member page or the contact form. And with that, welcome to the guest seat, Mr. G's.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing fine. Had a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing you over there with the Carters. The Carters are always a lot of fun.
And now we're sliding into a masterclass.
Yeah, we're going to talk about point of view. And I've got hundreds of pages of notes, plus that G's Writer how-to over there on Amazon. I think that thing's like 40, 45 pages, something like that. So I really wasn't sure where to go with it. So I just pulled out a couple of examples of things and figure we'll just start talking about some examples. And if people want to call in with some questions or make scurrilous accusations with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in them over on Twitter, that would be cool. So before we do this, why don't we start by running the G's Writer commercial?
All right. This is G's Writer how-to.
Hey, writers and assorted storytellers, expand your skills with the G's Writer How-To Series. Longtime publisher, author, composer, and producer Stephen G's launched this growing series as a companion to the G's Writer Author Resources website. The first installments include indie publishing, point of view, outlining, narrative, and dialogue. Each is packed with 35 to 50 pages of practical advice, contemporary standards, and publishing practices, and step-by-step challenges helping you develop your skills. Each includes practice assignments at the basic, intermediate, and advanced levels. They include examples you can see and study, even as you practice enhancing your own material. Check out G'sWriter.com and find the G's Writer How-To Series ebooks at Amazon. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group and Stephen G's, the G's Writer How-To Series is for serious writers who never stop striving for innovation and finesse in their best works. G's Writer How-To.
All right. I highly endorse that book. I've read it myself, and I think that guy knows a little bit about what he's talking about anyway. So
yeah.
Point of view, the last time we did this on episode 77, we covered just some basic things. And one of the conventions that I think is most important, which we mentioned before, but I'll repeat it again, is that when you're writing something that's more than short form, multiple scenes, multiple chapters, you're pretty much limited by modern literary convention to having only one point of view scene. And if you don't, and you start going back and forth between multiple points of view within the same scene, that's called lots of terrible things, including head hopping. And it makes readers very uncomfortable. Most readers probably don't even pay attention to point of view or know these kind of conventional rules and stuff, but they know that it makes them feel uncomfortable when they're hopping around and don't really know whose head they're in, as opposed to being able to get right inside a character's head and go for that ride until the next scene break or chapter break. So that is very important, very, very important that you stick to making the choice of whose point of view is this next scene going to be in. Okay. And then one of the things that we did mention last time is when you're going to do point of view and you're paying attention to point of view to make sure that you're writing it, not just correctly, but so that you can enhance your narrative and add to it, there's five things that you got to pay attention to. And the first one is the senses. You know, when you're describing what's going on with a character, put us in that person's senses. It's not just what does that person see, you know, like he sees the bad guy running away or the car's getting away or something went over the cliff or whatever, But what does that person hear? What does that person smell, sense, taste? And, you know, there's more than five senses, balance and feeling electrical energy and stuff like that. And if you've got a character that feels those kinds of things, you should include those too. So bring all of the senses into your point of view descriptions. Don't just describe what you as the writer are seeing. Describe what the character is experiencing. And that's important. And the easiest way to do that is through the senses. And then number two, the second thing to keep in mind is knowledge and history. When you're writing in a particular person's point of view, the narrator gets to know everything that person knows, gets to know the history. If that person, you know, is a survivor of, you know, the concentration camps of the Holocaust or whatever, then your narrator can describe things in a way that shows what that person's life experiences were. One of my favorite examples of that is Jonathan Kellerman wrote a book called Billy Straight. It was a thriller. And it was a runaway boy who was getting a real bad situation with his mother's boyfriend. And he just left, decided he was going to try to survive on his own. 12 years old, he winds up in Griffith Park in Los Angeles, and he winds up witnessing a murder. And then the people who killed the guy saw him, and now they're trying to kill him. So he's on the run. This poor kid's on the run from the police, from his mother, from the bad guys and all that kind of stuff. He breaks into a synagogue. And we see the entire scene of him going into the synagogue and finding the food and all these kinds of things from his point of view. But he does not understand where he is. He doesn't know what a synagogue is. He doesn't know what those crackers are up there on the table. And you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Great story.
Great story, yeah. But the point is, when you're in the kid's point of view, you can't let anything be said that he wouldn't know. You can't explain what those crackers are on the table, or you can't use the term menorah if he wouldn't know the term menorah. So you've got to stick to the character's knowledge and history. Now, what's cool about that example I just gave you, and I'm going to highly recommend you go get that book and read it if you want to study point of view, because Jonathan Kellerman's one of the best thriller writers at manipulating point of view. But what's cool about that is kid winds up crawling into a cabinet and falling asleep. Scene break. Now we're going to continue the story, but from the point of view of the rabbi who pulls up outside and sees that the window's broken into. And he goes inside and he sees, you know, that it looks like maybe vandals got in or thieves or whatever, but maybe not, because it didn't look malicious and didn't steal the valuable stuff, just took the crackers and whatever. But as this guy's in there, he hasn't found the kid yet, but as he's in there looking at what's happening, he's immediately struck with being scared, because he is a Holocaust survivor and he lost his family. And it's something that it triggers emotional responses in him. So when he sees the trail of breadcrumbs that this kid left, he's interpreting it as, oh no, they're coming for us. And he has to try to fight his way out of those emotional feelings in order to be the logical rabbi again, who's trying to solve the mystery of, is this thieves or is this just a kid or whatever? So again, the same scene happens from two different points of view, and it's a bit of what I call a rewind. And he gets to know what those crackers are called. He gets to know what all the different things are called and stuff, because he's got the knowledge and history. So that's your second element on point of view. Third one would be the thoughts. When you're in a person's character's head and you are in that person's point of view, you get to be privy to that person's thoughts. Now, telling us what another person's thinking, no, that's not going to work, because then you're head hopping. But on the other hand, when you're in a person's thoughts, that person can interpret another person's thoughts. So if you've got two people, you know, maybe they're on a blind date, they're meeting for the first time, and you want to say he's real nervous, he's never had a blind date go well before, he doesn't have very much confidence, and now he's got this zit on his nose, and he thinks she's looking at it, and all that kind of stuff, you can't tell us what she's thinking. But he can look at her and interpret what he thinks she's thinking, and then we get to know that. And that can be really interesting writing, and especially if we later on find out that what she was really thinking was very different than what his interpretations are. So don't mix up interpretation and direct knowledge. You can't tell us what she's thinking while we're in his head, but he can figure a lot of it out from inside his head, and we're allowed to do that. But in most cases, you're probably going to be better off having another scene anyway where she gets to be the point of view character, and then we'll know for a fact what she was thinking and what was going on. So that's your number three. That one's thoughts. Okay, number four here. Let me see. You'd think I would know this without flipping the page, wouldn't you? Interpretation. If you look at a pile of garbage on the side of the road, maybe you're thinking, oh, some idiot pulled up and threw his trash out there or whatever. Maybe another person drives by and sees that and sees, oh, okay, they've got that new program now where they're picking up the trash and leaving small piles on the side of the road to be picked up later. And maybe somebody else sees that and sees vandalism. So these are not good examples, but my point is interpretation is a key element in point of view. Whenever you're trying to describe what's going on what the person is experiencing, seeing, sensing, hearing, tasting, smelling, all that kind of stuff, the interpretation is what brings that character alive. So it's not just the smell of strawberries. It's the smell of mommy's strawberry shortcake, which she used to make every spring when they would go out picking. You know, things like that, the associations, interpretations, and whatnot. And then, of course, the last one, point number five, was your point of view character gets to know what's going on in his or her own plot, but not what else is happening in the book. So if you've got parallel scenes happening with another character somewhere else, your point of view character can't know that stuff until the story actually informs that character. And many of you are thinking, well, I wouldn't do that. Who would do that? And you'd be surprised how many people do that. And the big giveaway on that one is using the phrase, little did he know.
As you know, Bob.
Yeah. I have seen that little did he know many times. It's like, you know, yeah, he got the fire put out. Little did he know that it was the flames were behind him, you know, or something like that. Well, if in his point of view, if the flames are behind him and he's not feeling them, then he doesn't know. In which case, we don't get to find out until he feels the heat and turns and sees those flames. So the information about what's happening in the story, you'd be surprised how many people make the mistake of letting a point of view character know things that that character is not supposed to know yet. So you got to keep that kind of stuff straight. So you seen some examples of these, Beam?
Yeah, sure have. You know, and I'm currently editing, you know, a book. There's a scene where the point of view character, he sits down on a park bench and he's kind of looking around and you're getting his thoughts. And then next thing you know, there's no scene break or anything. We're in the head of another guy who's seeing the guy sitting on the bench and we're being told what this guy's thinking. It's like, that doesn't work like that. You know, that's the head hopping.
Yeah,
so
that's the Russian guy, isn't it?
Yes. That's the Russian guy.
I read that chapter.
Yeah, he's Czech. He's a Czech. From the Czech Republic, but
That was a tough chapter to read because I kept having to backtrack and try to figure out who is this, whose head am I in?
Yeah, and so I'm trying to clean that up, and that's hard work to do that. It takes time.
Yeah. All right. So now that we've recovered, you know, some of those basic things here, let's roll a commercial.
There's a couple of things here on Twitter. First, Marlena says thanks for the tip, Stephen. For the concert tip. And Joe Conchel says, hi, Stephen. I just downloaded the How To Point of View and How To Dialogue book. So,
all right.
Good job, Joe.
Joe just doubled sales for the year. Thanks, Joe. And if we don't have any callers, let's go ahead and roll a commercial, and then we'll start talking about narrative intrusion.
All righty.
Ooh, Papala Skies by Stephen Gies. Chicago native Rochelle DuFortier likes to imagine the future. Her world, a series of picture postcards so vivid they sometimes seem real. When a foolish mistake at 13 causes her mother's death, she's sent to a secluded Hawaiian valley. An outsider Howley girl among pigeon-speaking boys who hurl flaming Papala spears under the full moon to summon her mother's spirit. After boarding school in a prestigious university back east, the ambitious young woman is torn between chasing new career opportunities, discovering her mother's heritage in a remote French village, and meeting obligations pulling her back to Hawaii. On this island steeped in ancient mythology and modern superstition, Rochelle tests the possibility of sharing pieces of her life with those whose beliefs she barely understands and never intends to embrace. She dives the depths of a pristine coral lagoon, conceals bodies in a subterranean lava tube, and challenges the eruptions of a living volcano, even as she deciphers the truth about her mother's death and struggles to satisfy new debts born of old betrayals. Papala Skies is the story of a young woman who makes all the right choices, only to find herself living an unexpected life. It is about the need to belong and seeking one's own version of truth amid such differing cultures' responses to wrenching loss and abiding grief. It is about yearning for a sense of place, yet having to confront new ways to honor the love of family and friends. Will Rochelle lose what matters most? Or might she learn what the smart octopus already knows? Papala Skies by Stephen Gies. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
Now, Papala Skies is a novel that's entirely from one point of view. It's a young woman named Rochelle. And in the first part of the book, the chapters alternate between her at different ages. It starts when she's 13, and then the next chapter, she's graduating from college. And then the next one, she's 14, and then right after she graduated from college. So we kind of go back and forth, and things happen in her youth that affect her adult world. And then by the middle of the book, everything's caught up, and then the story proceeds forward from there. The example of point of view in that book that's most worth paying attention to, and you can see this if you get the book and just read just a few pages, the first few pages. Rochelle is a person who likes to daydream and drift and have imagination, fantasize things, stuff like that. So like when she jumps in she's in Boston and she gets on the train to go into the city and she looks out the window, she doesn't see Boston. She imagines looking out the window of a train in the French countryside where her mother grew up. And, like when she's in Hawaii, she'll step out of the building at night and she'll look and she'll see the cliffs and there'll be faces in the cliffs and they'll start whispering to her. And the sky above her will be Adler Planetarium where she grew up in Chicago and used to go when she was a little girl. So its interpretation is a heavy aspect of that. Now, a few people have said, yeah, that book has a lot of description, and it does. But again, the description is what are her impressions? And one of the things that's important is to understand the difference between what is real and what are her impressions and how is she interpreting things. And when you start to understand how she does that and how she sees the world, now that character has come to life. So that's an example of using point of view interpretation to bring a character to life and give their thoughts interior meaning and motivation and structure and all the things that fit into there that drive the plot. So I'm going to recommend that book for those of you who are interested in learning about doing this kind of stuff as an example of interpretation. And by the way, that last thing that I mentioned about plot and information awareness being something that the point of view character, if the point of view character knows it, okay. And if it doesn't, don't put it in there. Probably the best example that I've seen of the mistake that I see done all the time is having your point of view character know somebody's name without necessarily knowing it. And it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. I didn't say the character knew the name. I just had the narrator tell us that other character's name. So if we're in Bob's point of view, the narrator can't say in walked John, who he had never met. Because if he never met him, he doesn't know it's John who just walked in. The narrator needs to say in walked a man he's never met, a tall guy with dark hair or something like that.
Yeah, that whole point of view thing, it covers, it's the narrative, it's the dialogue, it's not just, one aspect of it, it's the whole thing. With the here comes, he's never met him and it's John, no, describe John and this guy with disheveled hair and walks with a limp and got the eye patch on his left eye or whatever. Then you find out later when he introduces himself that it's John.
Hmm. I've said we do narrative intrusion. Why don't we talk about narrative voice? I think that might be a little bit more important. There's no way that we're going to talk about all of these things in just today's episode or even if we
may need to do a part three.
A third time or a fourth time because there's just so much. And I do want to stress point of view conventions. It's something writers, fiction writers especially, need to learn. You're doing it the way readers expect, and you don't come off amateurish. But it's not like a rule that holds you down. It's the rules that open things up for you and give you new creative opportunities to express the inner lives of your characters. So narrative voice, that's the person who's talking, and how does that person talk? So your narrator, a lot of times for a lot of writers, talks the way the writer talks. But a lot of times your narrator might be a character in the story, in which case that person needs to talk the way that character talks. So when writers are using multiple point of view, meaning that in a book it goes back and forth between different characters' points of view between the scene breaks or the chapter breaks, they can choose between relying on one narrative voice, that style of speaking, that reflects the point of view, or they can change the narrative voice with each point of view. Now, if you're narrating in the first person, it's obvious that you can do that. Then you get into stuff like Barbara Kingsolver's Poisonwood Bible, where you alternate four characters, each narrating in the first person and speaking the way that person speaks. And it's from an adult to a developmentally disabled girl who sees things, the world, very differently than most people. So again, you can have one narrative voice that covers everybody, or switch it for each time. Now, consider this. I'll give you just an example of a couple of lines from a story here. It's not a real story. I just made it up for this. Security Officer Welch cornered the intruder behind some shipping crates. It turned out to be a kid, maybe 12 or 13, with dirty blonde hair and trousers hanging so low his ratty boxers showed. The kid glared back, defiance in his eyes. But as Welch moved closer, he flinched and looked scared. Okay, now you hear a lot of interpretation in there, right? You know, the kid glared back, defiance in his eyes. You know, that's all interpretation. Okay, now, try listening to it this way. The cop had Sean cornered, staring him down, apparently unaware the other boy was hiding a few yards away. With no place to run, Sean decided he would have to use his knife. Cops were known for beating anybody they caught inside the warehouse. Now, is there any doubt whose point of view the second version was in? It's Sean. It's the kid. So in that sense, the narrator sounded the same. You know, the narrator told you what the cop was seeing and experiencing and interpreting, and then tried it a different way by telling you what the kid knew about the other kid who was hiding, that he had a knife and stuff like that, and interpreted it his way. But now, let's try it in changing the narrative voices so that each of them has a different narrative voice to help enhance that point of view. So let's start with the cop. The intruder jumped behind those crates. Ha! He had him trapped now. No way out. Wow, it was just a kid, hardly old enough to sing low notes. With dirty blonde hair, he looked like a street kid or one whose mom is too busy turning tricks to care. He let his pants hang, showing dirty boxers like that would somehow make him cool. He tensed as if to fight, so Officer Welch moved a bit closer, testing him, and the kid flinched. Yeah, another naive punk scared of the police when it's perverts on the street he needs to be worrying about. A lot of interpretation in that cop's point of view, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here it is from Sean's point of view again, but we're going to change the narrative voice to sound more like the way Sean would think. Rent-a-cop looked disappointed, like no excuse for shooting to kill. He must not have seen the other guy hiding over there. Be lucky he doesn't get his head cracked. Got to get to the blade quick, cut him and run. Sure thing this cop would bust him up if he ever got his hands on him. That's the way Sean talks. So that's the way the narrator talked. See the difference? It's a conscious choice that you need to make. And once you have made it, you need to stick with it. I've seen people start out one way, and by the middle of the book, they're doing it a different way. And even sometimes shifting back again and stuff. So I want to stress, think about these things. And those of you who are outliners, yay, figure this stuff out in your outlining stage. I identify who the point of view character of every scene is going to be in the outline, because then I can look at my outline and see how does my point of view flow. If I got 9 scenes in a row from one point of view and then scene 10 from another one and then back to that first person for the next 6 again, should I break that up a little bit, do some more back and forth? You know, or do I have one point of view in chapter 9 and that's the only time that point of view is going to be in the whole book, in which case I'm probably better off finding a way to fold it into another point of view? Do all that stuff in the outline stage, make your conscious choices, and then, like we just said, narrative voice is one of those choices you need to make.
Cool. What? Now, we do have a question from Joe Conjo on Twitter. He says, Stephen, I generally write in first person. What are your tips, thoughts on how to stay away from getting bogged down with the first person POV when advancing the story? I use separate chapters written in third person to develop and flesh out other key characters.
That's interesting. So you're alternating between first and third person in the book. Okay. And I've seen that done a number of times. One of the great examples that I like to quote is The Orphan Game by Ann Darby.
Another great book.
Oh, man. I was just remarking that I've got a hardcover on my shelf here, and then I got a second hardcover because I obtained an autographed copy, and that's one of my prized possessions over here. I'm a big fan of hers. But in The Orphan Game, she's got places where the characters just narrate their own story, and then she switches to the third person for other parts of the story, even though it might be the same character. And she's got one chapter where things are happening in the house. Mom's in the kitchen, dad's in one room, this daughter's in another room, and things are happening fast. And she bounces around one paragraph for each person. We're in mom's head finding out she's listening to what's happening in the other room and how she's interpreting it. Boom, scene break. Now we're in the other room in the daughter's head, and we see what really is happening there, but we get the daughter's interpretation of it. A couple of sentences later, scene break. Now we're in the son's head. And so you can do that kind of stuff, and you can do it between the first and third, obviously, and you can even bring in the second person. So what are your tips and thoughts on how to stay away from getting bogged down with a first-person point of view when advancing the story? I'm not sure how you would get bogged down in it, but it's going to come down to, if you're going to write in the first person, you're going to have to write the way that character writes, or that character speaks, that way that character talks. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but you're going to constantly have to check yourself on that, because even if you're over there writing in the third person and converting them, it's still easy to let that kind of stuff slip through. So I kind of highly recommend, if you're going to write in the first person, stick with it, because it's a little easier for readers sometimes to know where they stand. But on the other hand, I never shy away from a good creative format like The Orphan Game by Ann Darby and the way Joe Conjul describes that he's putting his stuff together. So I don't know if I answered your question, Joe. You can ask a little bit more specifically if not, but thanks for writing in.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Poisonwood Bible. That is my all-time favorite book. That's just a brilliant exercise in point of view with the way the characters sound, each point of view. The youngest, Ruth, is 7, I believe, and that character sounds like a 7-year-old. It's the way it's written. And then you're in the mother's point of view in the next chapter, and it sounds like a mother, a matronly woman, you know. And so you pay attention to that stuff, and Kingsolver did it brilliantly. I mean, just brilliantly.
Yeah, definitely. So you want to run another commercial?
Yes.
Frank relishes fast success in early retirement, but struggling to preserve his life's work thrusts him into a desperate battle to protect the people he cares about most. Beverly seeks a new beginning in Tarpon Springs until those she trusts steal control of her destiny, forcing a fight for her very survival. All 12-year-old Kevin wants is attention from the only man he respects. Yet murder and the wrenching indifference of a callous legal system toward one vulnerable child proves even friendship might never be enough. Riven by tragedy, consumed by grief, all three must confront the wondrous possibility that our indelible bonds may somehow transcend even death, that a cherished soul truly can find the way back. Only together might this improbable family dare embrace their own brand of unexpected love, that infinite potential to achieve more than any one person can alone. Through it all, they are teased by the mystery of those dancing lights, A million pinpoints in every imaginable color, swirling to form brilliant images of extraordinary lives. Dance of the Lights by Stephen Gies is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. Wait.
Now, if you're interested in that book, that one has three points of view that alternate, and it's written entirely in the third person. So it's the narrator telling us what the interpretations are. But, you know, we read some Kevin's story, and then we read some of Frank's story, then we read some of Beverly's story, and then back to Kevin again, and we just keep alternating. Now, the fourth go ahead.
I was just going to say, and, you know, these last two commercials, Papalus Guys and Dance of Life, obviously these are Stephen G's books. I've read both of those books and the ones that are coming up as well. And I can attest that if you're into excellent storytelling, grab a copy because you'll learn about the point of view, but you'll also be entertained with the story itself.
Well, thank you. The fourth character in that is Linda, Beverly's daughter, and she is killed fairly early in the book, but is not gone from the story. And that's part of what this Dancing Lights are about. It's not a ghost story, but it's kind of a slipstream fiction thing, and it kind of answers the question of how badly does somebody's grief make them lead to wanting to get help from the person they lost. And in order to do that, there's some secrets, as it were, that you don't really know until the end of the book to it that explain what is really happening here and what's going on with Linda. If I had put any scenes in Linda's head, I'd have had to reveal stuff. You see, because, you know, the Dancing Lights, they know what they are. It's nobody else does. So the point at which you decide that you want to put something in a point of view where the secrets all lie, you got to let them out because you can't be in somebody's head and pretend that that person doesn't know what's really happening. So it can be a little bit complicated, but that's an example of alternating points of view in the third person. So another important topic to talk about in point of view. And this, I wrote much of this stuff probably 15, 20 years ago when I was teaching volunteer classes on story writing and stuff like that. And point of view, duh, is what I call it in this G's Writer How-To, or U-Poppers, unnecessary point of view reminders. This is a concept to this day I have still never seen anybody else even identify, let alone write about or give some how-to on or anything. Whereas if you Google head hopping, you'll come up with probably 1,000 how-tos telling you how to avoid head hopping and stuff like that. So I'm not going to be able to get into it very deep today. I do want to say that in that G's Writer How-To on point of view, there are examples where it shows you different ways that you can edit to avoid these unnecessary point of view reminders. But I just want to give you some examples to show you what I'm talking about. It's important to identify early in a scene whose point of view you're in. Don't make us wait two or three paragraphs to figure out that, oh, we're in the priest's point of view here. Let us know in that first sentence or two. Once we're in that character's head, we'll sit on that person's shoulder and go for the ride, and everything will make sense to us. Once you have done that, you don't have to keep telling us that you're in their point of view. And I see that a lot. I have seen stories that just kind of drove me nuts because every sentence is reminding me whose point of view we're in unnecessarily. So I'm going to give you some example here. I'm going to read a paragraph here that's just chock full of unnecessary point of view reminders. Marty peeked out his front door and saw two tattooed teenagers on the sidewalk. He noticed they looked jittery. A parked car could be seen, which a third teen leaned against. Marty recalled riding in the same kind of car several years before, and he remembered how luxurious it felt. He could hear birds chirping overhead, but he detected a note of franticness in their songs. That's when he caught a whiff of smoke. He thought it smelled like drugs, and he felt angry about the teens' invasion of his neighborhood. It looked to him like they did not care that they were intruding on someone else's property. He considered the idea that they had probably stolen that car. Now, what you heard was you heard all five senses, right? You heard lots of interpretation. You heard a strict, straight point of view. We're in Marty's head and nobody else's. It's just that we were constantly reminded of it. When you say Marty peeked out his front door and saw two tattooed teenagers on the sidewalk, and saw is an unnecessary reminder. If he peeked out the door and there's two teenagers out there, do we also need the words and saw? Or can you kind of figure out if he peeked out the door and the narrator now says there's two teenagers standing out there? He must have seen them because we're in his point of view and he's peeking out the door. Kind of obvious, right? Next sentence says he noticed they looked jittery. He noticed. How about they look jittery? Or better yet, show, don't tell. Show us what jittery looks like and don't tell us that they look jittery. Your next one, a parked car could be seen, which Athene 13 learned leaned against. Boy, let me try that again. A parked car could be seen, which a third teen leaned against. Could be seen is unnecessary. Marty recalled riding in the same kind of car several years before, and he remembered how luxurious it felt. Marty recalled and he remembered. We don't need either of those. He could hear birds chirping overhead, but he detected a note of franticness. He thought it smelled like drugs. He felt angry. It looked to him like they didn't care. He considered the eye. You see every bit of that. You can take all of that out. I guarantee every word of that you can go, and it won't change your meaning a bit. So now let's try it another way. Let's change all of those unnecessary reminders to active verbs. Marty peeked out his front door. Boom. We just covered a couple of sentences worth. Two jittery teenagers stood on the sidewalk. So Marty peeked, teenagers stood. Subject verb, quick, simple, concise. A third teen leaned against a parked car, a luxurious model Marty once rode in several years before. Bam, we just covered the history. We eliminated three sentences and put them into one. Birds chirped frantically overhead. Do we need to say he heard birds chirping? We're in his point of view. If the birds are chirping and the narrator said it, they must be heard. And if the narrator's not hearing them, then I don't want to hear about it from the narrator either. Smoke with the odor of drugs wafted about, an infuriating invasion of the neighborhood. Those teens didn't care about intruding on somebody else's property. They probably stole that car. See, I took every bit of that unnecessary stuff out, and it was actually a little bit more clear, I would think. Okay, now, let's beef up the interpretation. In that case, we're in Marty's point of view. Everything described must have been perceived by him. Jittery teenagers, birds chirping frantically, stuff like that. Now, see, that's when it rises to interpretation. Jittery teenagers, birds chirping frantically. I mean, do birds really sound frantic? Can you tell the difference? I'm not sure I can. But every time you eliminate those, you always look for ways to inject even more interpretation and attitude. So consider this. Cheryl watched the old man spending an inordinate amount of time peering at their neighbor's shed, and she thought that he was trying to ascertain something. So we're already in Cheryl's point of view. We didn't need to hear Cheryl watched, and we didn't need to hear she thought. All we had to say was the suspicious old man was snooping around their neighbor's shed. And if we're in her point of view and it's in her scene, then we know that's what she's seeing, and we know that that's what she's thinking, and we know that that's how it's interpreting. It sounds easy, but it's a lot more challenging than you might think for a lot of people. Now, let's add an even another higher level of interpretation. Marty peeked out his front door for a better look at the intruders. A couple of jittery teenagers loitered suspiciously on the sidewalk, clearly up to no good. A third teen leaned against one of those luxury cars, the kind in which Marty only once had the privilege to ride. Birds chirped frantically overhead, as if warning neighbors to beware of such thugs. See that all that extra interpretation in there? Smoke wafted about, likely drugs perniciously invading what used to be a safe, friendly neighborhood. Those hoodlums didn't care about intruding on others' property. They probably even stole that car, and no telling what else. Now, see, your narrator's starting to sound like that old man, isn't he? Because the interpretation is being ramped up. You having fun, Beam?
I'm having a blast.
Yeah. Let's do one more here and try to move on.
We have another comment on Twitter, a couple of them actually.
Okay, go.
We'll throw these in here because they're quick. Let's see. Verwayne Greenho says, you make it sound so easy, Stevie. Yeah, try that again. You make it sound so easy, Stephen. LOL, but I doubt it is. If was, you wouldn't be talking to us about this tonight. Thank you for sharing this information. And Joe Conjo says, I could send you a copy of one of my books just for your reading pleasure, not asking for a free critique, just so you can see how I put the first and the third together.
I would like that very much. That would be cool. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
All right. So unnecessary point of view reminders. If we add some more attitude, all right, consider this. Here's a very wordy description. Brent returned to the fire-damaged home where he had spent his childhood. He stepped through the front door and saw the familiar front room, its walls and ceiling burned through to the studs. He could smell smoke in the air, even weeks after the fire. He walked into the kitchen and discovered how the damage concentrated where the fire had started on the stove. He looked underneath the charred hulk and saw buckled floorboards nearly breaking through. Notice that what's happening here is we're in his point of view, but we are moving him around the house. He's down on his knees looking under things. He's going to the next room. He's going upstairs. And we are constantly telling you that. Is that necessary? Or consider trying it this way. Brent returned to the fire-damaged home where he had spent his childhood. He stepped through the front door and saw the familiar front room, its walls and ceiling burned. I'm sorry, that one hadn't been changed yet. Here it is. Brent walked through his fire-damaged childhood home. Okay, walk through. We just covered the whole house. The walls and ceiling of the familiar front room had burned through to the studs. Gee, he must be in the front room if his point of view is seeing those studs in the living room, right? Weeks after the fire, smoke still permeated the air. The damage concentrated where the fire had started at the kitchen stove, now a charred hulk, nearly breaking through buckling floorboards. Eerie silence in the family room replaced years of blasting TV and childish noise. Smoky soot layered the upstairs bathroom where the giant mirror, warped and cracked by heat, splintered and bloated his image. The fluorescent desk light in his bedroom had shattered. You see that? We moved him around the house, and yet I never told you once that he moved, did I? I just put the next line in the next sentence. And his point of view, the fact that we had a good, clean, tight point of view is what kept us there. So that is the shortest version of unnecessary point of view reminders that you'll ever hear. But if you want a lot more examples and more details and more nuances on how to do that, G's Writer How To Point of View over on Amazon. I think it's $1.99 or $1.99, something like that. Get over there and get your copy.
Worth it.
So, Bean, do you want to roll another commercial, see if we can sell another book for this G's guy?
Sure, why not? It's another one that I've read, and this one is actually my favorite of the Stephen G's novels. It's called Fantasy Batch.
Announcing from Fresh Ink Group by acclaimed author Stephen G's. Fantasy Batch. Picture this. Dante Roenick creates ad campaigns, reveling in the fine art of rendering his concepts on million-dollar canvases financed by big-budget clients. Intoxicated by the sheer power of directing public opinion, he dares wage war against the conglomerate behind a worldwide antidepressant increasingly associated with sporadic violence. To juxtapose his images with reality, he enlists a mixed palette of business tycoons, his fiancé attorney, a team of corporate spy soldiers of fortune, one resurgent news anchor, and the best TV production crew in all of Chicago. But the sharp lines dividing perception from truth begin to blur when the darker motives shaping mass media come to light. Forced to re-examine the ethics of designer pharmacology, Dante is painted into a corner, his future about to be erased as patients die, clients lie, and unhealthy doses of murder prove too hard to swallow. Too late to whitewash the stain of deceit, Dante must decide who deserves to appear in his picture, the true subject, an unfinished self-portrait. Way past its own deadline. It's not what you see, not what you get. Let Dante show you how. With a Fantasy Patch. Read Fantasy Patch now in print or ebook, available worldwide. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
Now, I know you're going to be surprised to hear this, but Fantasy Patch is actually a pretty good example of point of view. Point of View Techniques. The entire book is written from one point of view, Dante Roenick. Every word in it is entirely his point of views. Nothing, no information, nothing else out there comes from any other person. It's also the only novel I've ever written where it was narrated in the first person. So Dante tells you his own story. And I wound up making that choice because Dante does a lot of interpreting. And unfortunately, things don't always turn out to be what you think they are or the way they you think they're happening. So Dante sometimes has to do some reinterpreting. So it was a much more interesting character study to be in his head while he's trying to justify why he was wrong about something or why he went a different direction and whatnot. So that made it more real and it made it more vivid. It's also the only novel I've ever written entirely in the present tense. And that was an interesting decision to make. I tend to try to do something different every time I write something. So trying something different with present tense was appealing to me in the first place. But again, I wanted it to be the right choice. And the reason I did it that way is, as I just mentioned, things sometimes change perception. In fact, that's what Fantasy Patch is about, is perception. And how do you get people to think things and see things and interpret things and whatnot? Because that's what Dante's job is, to manipulate image and public relations and advertising and product concepts and things like that. And in this case, when Dante is really self-righteous about doing the right thing and then has to find out later that he wasn't necessarily doing the right thing, if you write that in the past tense, then you're stuck with what you call hindsight. Your character, if your character's telling the story that happened last year, then your character already knows how it ends. Your character already knows when he was wrong. He already knows the bad choices that he made. And he's going to tell that story from that perspective in terms of, hey, you got to realize at the time we thought this, so we did that, and here's how it went, but now we figured this much out. It's a lot more interesting to put him there at the time, in the place, in the situation, and let him be all self-righteous and tell you why things are the way they are, even though you, the reader, might not even think that he's right. So present tense was my way of avoiding him having hindsight. And that's actually a point of view decision all of you need to make when you're writing your stories, is your point of view character know how this story going to turn out? Whether it's being narrated in the first person or just reflecting from the narrator's telling you the point of view of that character. It's still a different point of view, a different perspective if you know what's going to happen next. And in my case, I didn't want Dante to know. So Fantasy Patch is a fun book for that as well.
Well, like I said, that's my favorite of the Stephen G's novels. It really is. It's just loaded with all kinds of action and interesting characters and twists and turns and just a well-written novel.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I've been a big fan of Point of View way back. The first one of the first things that I wrote, I had an agent in San Francisco, and I had messed up a few little Point of View things, and she wrote me a lengthy letter back, like two-page type letter, explaining to me a couple of the Point of View mistakes that I had made. And that spurred me to go learn more about it and start studying it and pay more attention to it in the books I read, which by far is the best place to learn it, is to read it, you know, see what other people are doing with it. And, oh, wow, look how she did this. Is this great? I might use that kind of technique someday. So it was important for me to learn that stuff early on. And since then, I have made a lot of effort in all of my stories to play with, have fun, be creative with point of view, come up with some new techniques and things like that. So if any of you out there are ever reading any of my stories and you want to argue point of view or talk about why did you do this or whatever, I've got an answer for you. So use that contact form at freshinkgroup.com and I'll be happy to spar with you over point of view. Likewise, if you've got some good examples or questions from your work, send them along. And in that G's Writer How-To on Amazon, there are actually practice exercises there that you can do just for your own practice to develop your own point of view skills. Or if you want, you can do the exercise and send it on to me. Get a comment and, you know, maybe get some feedback. So anyway,
we've got a couple of comments here. Joe Congel says, I'll send you Deadly Passion because it not only has the first and third point of view, but it also has a 20-year flashback element. I can send you a paperback or email you an ebook, your choice. So get over
I like print books, Joe.
Okay. So I was going to say, get over to Twitter and you know, set things up. And also, Michael Egging, he's on here, and he says, that is an interesting take on present tense as well. So welcome to the audience there, Michael.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Michael in a little while. Yeah, welcome aboard, Michael.
Yeah.
So at any rate, again, all we really did here today was just touch on a couple of the aspects of point of view. It's a big area with a lot to learn, unlimited creative potential, and a whole lot of fun. It really is. I mean, if you want to get me to put a 5-star review for your book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Goodreads or whatever, impress me with your point of view finesse, because that really, really stands out for me. So, you know, I appreciate the questions and comments today and everybody's participation. I encourage you to check out that G's Writer How-To.
Yeah. All righty. So we wrapping this, or you got some more?
No, I think we're past our hour now, and let's tell them who we got on our upcoming shows here, and then we'll close today's show by playing a handful of commercials so that you can hear about some other books besides mine as well.
Just
so next week, I'm traveling. I'm going to be in Michigan. In fact, I'm going to see my co-host, even though he lives 1,000 miles away. It'd be nice to see him again, and we're going to go to a couple of concerts and hit the Detroit Symphony and do some cool things while I'm up in Michigan. So next week's show, since I'm going to be a slacker, is a rerun. It's the Karen Ingalls, Carol Tucker episode, where when we put out Karen Ingalls' book, Learning About Autism, and much of that book focused on Carol Tucker, who adopted an autistic child and then discovered that the resources were not out there. So she founded a school for autistic children and developed some other resources and just accomplished a whole lot of great things. And Karen chronicled all of that and then put together a good resource guide for the back of the book as well, for the book Learning About Autism. That episode, we're going to rerun it again next week. We will be able to monitor Twitter, but we won't be taking calls since it's a rerun. And I urge you to check that episode out. And if you know anybody who's got any interest in learning more about autism, check that out.
Yeah. And then after that, we've got a return visit from Mary Schmidt. Mary writes children's books and memoirs and just an all-around wonderful human being. And she's always fun to have on the show. And she's got a compelling story about losing her son at a young age to cancer. And be sure to tune in for that one.
After that, we've got Mark Schultz. He's got some cool how-to books, including how to build a paddleboard. And we've known Mark for quite a few years, and he's a good guy, and we'd like to support him and bring him on the show and let you all find out what he's been up to as well. And Beam, after that, I believe it's Richard Bell, right?
Richard Bell on June the 29th. And Richard's an author, and he's I'm not real familiar with him, but he reached out to us, and we're going to give him a platform to promote some of his work, and interesting to find out more about him. So that's June 29th.
We'll give him some rope and see what gets hung or hanged. I'm sorry. Did I say hung?
Oh, man.
You did.
What a way to end the show.
There's a show we can do. There's an episode.
Yeah.
The improper usage of words like hung.
Yeah.
No, pictures get hung. People get hanged.
Yeah, look at that. Boy, that bull's well hanged. But at any rate, thanks, everybody. Point of view, we're looking forward to having a break next week for Learning About Autism, and then we'll see you back live the week after that. Thanks again.
And we will see you again in a couple weeks live.
Yep. Now, do stick around for these commercials because they're cool.
Prepare to think as you explore these 19 short stories by author, composer, and producer Stephen Gies. Avoiding any single genre, this collection showcases Gies' storytelling from literary to Southern Gothic to coming of age, allegory, humor, and even fantasy, all finessed to say something about who we are and what we seek. Some of these tales have been passed around for years. Others so virgin they have never known the seductive gaze of a reader's eyes. Now, you can go digital, Kindle, Nook, Kobo, iTunes, Google Play, and more, or you can keep it soft with a paperback to whip out in mixed company. or you can really show off. Be the envy of your crowd with a dust jacket and hardcover. Fresh Ink Group is where it's coming from. Amazon and the rest are where it's at. Just point and click, and you too can feel the electric surge of the latest from Stephen G's. So when life's currents get to pulling too hard, don't fight it. Just open the book and discover 19 new ways of going with the flow. Because now, more than ever, comes this time to float. Hey writers, got a short story looking for a prestigious anthology that will showcase your work alongside other top authors? Or maybe you've experienced a moment worth sharing, perhaps with some poignant meaning we could all appreciate. Fresh Ink Group is accepting submissions for our second and third volumes of the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase to be released in hardcover, softcover, and all major ebook formats worldwide. There are no fees to enter. Winners are not only published, but are invited to become members with their own dashboard in the FreshInkGroup.com website. Head over to FreshInkGroup.com's Contests tab to learn more. Then grease up the old Underwood and get those shorts down so you can get your entries in sooner than later. And you readers, discover 49 wondrous tales already released in the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase No. 1, available now in all formats worldwide.
Now, from popular Christian romance author Jeannie Sharp, A Chance to Choose. The life of a baker had been his dream since college, but a deep void surfaces every morning when Ben looks at himself in the mirror. Why at 29 has he not been able to find the woman of his dreams? His boss and owner of Camden Bake Shop, Chloe, keeps pestering him about dating. Then, an old fling mails him a plane ticket to London. Except turmoil draws him back home to Virginia. Does Ben get the chance to go to London? With three women suddenly interested, will Ben ever be able to choose? A Chance to Choose is book three of the Second Chances series by Christian romance and children's book author Jeannie Sharp. A Chance to Choose is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats from Kindle to Kobo to Nook and Google Play. A Chance to Choose is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Grab your copy of A Chance to Choose today. Inspiring and unforgettable, Letting Go into Perfect Love is a riveting account of a journey through the terror of domestic violence to a faith that transforms all. As a college administrator, Gwendolyn M. Plano lived her professional life in a highly visible and accountable space. But as a wife and mother behind closed doors, she and her family experienced unpredictable threat. Every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. But to Gwen, this was her secret. It was her shame. Alternately, heart-wrenching and joyful, this is a story of triumph over adversity. One woman's uplifting account of learning how to forgive the unforgivable, recover her sense of self, bring healing into her family, and honor the journey home. Accompanied by glimpses of celestial beings, Gwen charts a path through sorrow to joy, and ultimately writes of the one perfect love we all seek. Gwen's story is heartbreakingly familiar. It provides insight into the phenomenon of domestic violence. Understanding that murky world may provide the reader with the skills to help his or her sister or friend or neighbor. Whether victim or friend, readers will be inspired by the author's courage. Letting Go into Perfect Love by Gwendolyn M. Plano is available now as a Fresh Ink Group edition in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions. The Audible audiobook edition is also available at Amazon. Order your copy now, and you may see your own challenges a little differently. While all of Mississippi bakes in the scorching summer of 1925, sudden orphanhood wraps its icy embrace around Emily Ann Baby Teagarden, a pretty young teen. Taken in by an aunt bent on ridding herself of this unexpected burden, Baby Teagarden plots her escape using the only means at her disposal, a voice that brings church ladies to righteous tears and makes both angels and devils take notice. "I'm going to New York City to sing jazz," she brags to anybody who'll listen. But the Big Apple, well, it's an awful long way from that dry patch of earth she's always called home. So when the smoky stages of New Orleans speakeasies give a whistle, offering all sorts of shortcuts, Emily Ann soon learns it's the whorehouses and opium dens that can sidetrack a girl and dim a spotlight, and knowing the wrong people can snuff it out. Jazz Baby just wants to sing, not fight to stay alive. Jazz Baby is available now in dust jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions worldwide. Jazz Baby by Beam Weeks is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Learning about autism, one mother's journey of discovery and love. A charter school, teaching methods, and resources is the book millions of families must have. Carol Tucker travels the road of autism and cerebral palsy with her adopted son, Justin, now a young man who routinely astounds physicians with his achievements. She is a special education teacher, recognized leader in children's advocacy, and one of the founders of Florida's first charter school for autism, where she served as director. Through photos and stories, best-selling author Karen Ingle shares Carol's journey, then offers a wealth of resources, teaching methods, school choices, and financial assistance options. With Karen's unique insight, learning about autism shows how one very determined mother and her family can rise above daunting challenges to thrive and find happiness. Learning About Autism is published worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions. Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, they are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. Compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ajluni, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
Hello Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley, features photos, stories, and complete listings of the entertainers, athletes, political leaders, and others who visited the area since 1900. Chattanooga has attracted some of the best-known celebrities in the world, thanks to our city's historic venues, beautiful scenery, and powerful people. Hello Chattanooga features hundreds of restored photos, behind-the-scenes stories, and thousands of fully indexed entries spanning more than 700 pages. I'm David Carroll. I've worked in Chattanooga television and radio for more than 40 years. I also write a weekly newspaper column and have written two other books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, A Photo History of Chattanooga Media, and Volunteer Bama Dog, A TV Guy's Love Letter to the South, a collection of my most popular stories. Hello Chattanooga is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in a keepsake jacketed hardcover edition with full color interior printing, softcover with black and white photos, and all color ebook formats worldwide. Take a trip back in time, enjoy great memories, and maybe even settle an argument as you learn the dates and places that your favorite star, athlete, or president visited the Chattanooga area.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.